Hi and welcome back. This is Police Stories Podcast and this is episode 39. We're going to continue on with close protection, but as you probably know if you've been here before, this is a series of short stories about my 28-year career in the UK police force. Once again, I'm in the glamorous location of a caravan in my garden. I'm hoping there's quite a bit of bird song in the background, so it's very jolly, but I'm hoping it won't ruin the sound quality too much today. It's getting better, I think, with the new microphone that I bought, but let me know what you think. One of the things I was going to say is that we're also on YouTube, Police Stories Podcast on YouTube, and that does give you the opportunity to go on and make comments and also ask any questions. I'll try and answer them if I can, or maybe if there's something you particularly want to know about, I might be able to bring them into a future episode. So by all means, you can kind of communicate through that if you want to. If you don't, then no problems at all. So yeah, back to close protection today, bodyguard work, as they call it in other countries. I'd completed the course, been an armed officer for a while at this point, probably 3 or 4 years at least, and had a reasonable amount of experience in different sort of armed work. We talked about the course last week. By all means, go back and download or listen to that episode, and that'll tell you what it's led up to. But we're on to the sort of first live job, so you can imagine it's quite an exciting position to be in when you first do close protection work. And it can be on all sorts of people, you know, members of the royal family, prime minister, visiting dignitaries. Quite often a lot of the work is made up of visiting members of royal families from different countries. So it can be people like that. You can also do witness protection, you know, so if there's a particularly big sort of nasty trial coming up where there's some concern that a witness could be gotten to, you know, then we potentially provide armed police protection if it was deemed serious enough. You know, if they were well connected enough, the criminals, that there could be an armed issue, then they might well get armed protection in relation to that. So it could be quite varied. But my first job was a member of the UK royal family, one of the princesses. And I was fairly excited about it, to be honest with you. I wasn't involved too much in the planning at the early stage. Certainly for me, you are, you know, very much sort of boots on the ground on the day. You don't really get involved in the planning side of it. That tends to come a bit later, and we'll get into that in a little while. So the plan was, it was a youth centre from what I remember, and the princess was coming to basically open, you know, do the formal opening, cutting, you know, the ribbon across the entrance of this new shiny new youth centre in an area. And like I say, the planning work had already been done. I was chosen to be the venue officer on the day, of which there'll be several. Obviously, there's various different roles throughout the day. I won't go into too much detail, but, you know, there's a lot of resources, even on the most minor sort of close protection job. And certainly for the royal family and the prime minister, etc., you know, that it's ramped up quite a bit. So there's lots and lots of resources there, both uniformed, you know, the actual protection team and other officers in different roles. But the venue officer's job is, you know, you're securing that venue. You'll be there, you know, maybe 2 hours before the princess arrives. And you obviously, you're thoroughly checking out the venue. The venue's been searched by, you know, bomb dogs and maybe other police resources. It's not the first time we've been there. You know, we'll have been to the venue in the weeks ahead. And certainly the planning team will have been there maybe months ahead, depending on how complicated the job was. But on the day, you're meeting the sort of staff there, you know, whoever's going to meet the princess, for example. You'll be meeting them and having a chat with them and just running through sort of, you know, how it's going to work, which they'll already know, or they certainly should do. It's a really good opportunity to have a feel for the venue, have a good look round, familiarise yourself. You need to know where those exits are, who the people are, because also, if there's somebody there, you know, that the staff don't know, and that's one of the things I used to say to them, you go around and speak to them, look, if there's any concerns, if you see somebody you've never seen before hanging around, you know, then let me know. And it might be that I approach, or it might be you speak to one of the uniform cops and say, can you just go and have a word and just establish who that is? You know, so there's a lot of work that happens, but that venue officer role is very important, because the main thing, now bearing in mind that people who have permanent protection, like the royal family, for example, will generally be assigned a personal protection officer. And that they might have two or three, because obviously there needs to allow for, you know, their normal protection officer going off sick or being on holiday or being on a course or something like that. So they'll maybe have a small pool of two or three that will be assigned to that person. And that's good for a number of reasons, because it does enable you to build up that relationship, and you get to understand your protected person. And likewise, they also kind of understand you. And it's really important to have that relationship, because if there's a problem, firstly, they'll let you know. And equally, if you say, and we talked about it last week, if you try and guide them or direct them in a certain way, then equally they won't just, you know, sort of ignore you. They'll listen, because they'll know that you're saying it for a reason. So on the day, I was the venue officer, and I would be one of the most important roles is being outside when they actually arrive. So that personal protection officer, as they draw up to the venue, they'll have already had it confirmed on the radio that, you know, it's safe to come in. There's no problems. We've done all the checks. You know, everything's in place, as you would expect. They'll know the venue as well, because they'll have visited it previously. And as you draw up outside, they're looking for that friendly face. They need to see that venue officer, and then they can relax knowing that it's all good, you know, and it's safe to come in, or as safe as it can be. Now, generally, a protection officer will get out of the car first and will go and open the door for the VIP. But some VIPs are dead against that. You know, they feel it's a bit stuffy, that it makes them, you know, seem a bit aloof and things. So it may be they open their door themselves. You opening the door has a dual role. Firstly, you know, obviously it is polite, you know, particularly if it's a member of the royal family or something. But secondly, you know, when that door is opened, you're standing in front of the open door, and therefore you're already providing body cover should somebody be, you know, planning on doing something, you know. So it's basically you are going to block the view from the person who may be waiting with bad intentions. So on the first day, I'd had a look round. I was pretty happy. I'd sort of liaised with the staff there, and I knew, you know, what the routine was expected and what was, you know, meant to be happening that day. So I was in position. The call had already been put out. It was safe to come in. I was in the venue. I was just outside the venue. As they pulled up, here comes their car. The protection officer's out straight away, and he opens the door for the princess, and she steps out. And obviously, you can imagine, you know, you're on high alert, your eyes are all about, you're looking at the crowds, you're looking on the roof line, you know, depending on the venue, you know, and how, what level it's at. You know, you may have rifle officers on the roofs, and you will know those people as well. So there'll be faces that you should recognise. And you're having, you know, a good look around. Now, if you remember last week, we talked about the two golden rules of close protection. One is to do something. If something happens, you know, you have to react. Even if you do the wrong thing, do something. Because if you stand there, you know, like a rabbit in the headlights, then that's definitely not good. The second one is you're absolutely not a bag carrier. You know, you cannot carry a bag for a VIP, no matter what sort of bag it is, because, you know, with your hands full carrying a bag, even if it's one hand, you cannot do your job. So it's really impressed on you on the course, you know, you're not a bag carrier. Don't ever carry a bag for someone. So bear that in mind. So Princess steps out, and she immediately is greeted by, you know, whoever it was from the venue. They say hello, and she turns to her protection officer and passes her handbag to him. And initially, just for a split second, I felt smug in that, I remember from my course, you're not meant to do that. You know, he's not done that right. Because very, very quickly, I realised what was going to happen. He's looking round, thinking to himself, I have to get rid of this bag. Who is going to carry it for me? And who do his eyes first come to? And it's me standing outside the venue. So he quickly whips up to me, walks over, passes me the handbag and says, can you look after this for us, please? And he returns to his position as a protection officer. So I kind of roll in my eyes, trying to be all cheerful about it and thinking, I can't believe it. You know, this is everything I was told you absolutely do not do. And here I am, first job, carrying a handbag. I thought, that's okay. I know where they're going. I know what the plan is. I'll go and ditch the handbag inside somewhere, you know, and then I can get back to my job. So I scoot off into the venue, and like I said, it's a youth centre, and I know that they've got various sort of, you know, handshaking to do, lines of people to meet and what have you, but ultimately they're going to end up at a buffet. You know, there's a load of food laid out on a table in a separate room where they're going to have a sort of a light lunch, as they'd call it, and that she's going to end up in there. So I thought, that's great. I will go in there and I'll put a handbag down somewhere in there, and then I'll leave it, and that's it, job done. Of course, I put the handbag down, walked out of the room, closed it, and thought, that room's not secure. I got in there easily. I just walked in and helped myself. Now I've put a handbag in there. Can you imagine how embarrassing it would be, particularly as it's me that's put it in there on my first protection job, if that bag got stolen or somebody rifled through it? Imagine if they stole her phone or her personal diary or anything, basically. It would be really, really embarrassing, and probably I would never do any more protection jobs again. So I was thinking, I cannot leave it. So I was kind of trying to think of a solution. I couldn't go and get the key, because then I thought, if I lock that door, I know what will happen. You know, somebody will then lose the key and she'll be coming up expecting her lunch, you know, and won't be able to get in the room. So I thought, I don't believe this. I'm going to have to stand outside this door. So now here I am on my first protection job. Firstly, I've taken a handbag, broken one golden rule, become a bag carrier. I've now put the handbag into the room. And what am I doing? I'm standing outside that room now, protecting, you know, the cucumber sandwiches with their crust cut off, of course, and the tea. Instead of being able to do my job. But I just couldn't see a way around it. I thought, if I do anything else, there's a real risk that handbag could go with all the embarrassment that we've just talked about. So I'm afraid the rest of my protection job, my first job, was stood outside protecting this handbag and the food. So pretty embarrassing, but what can you do? You know, I thought it was the best thing to do at the time. It probably was, looking back. But yeah, not quite the, you know, it's not like the bodyguard, is it, the film? You know, it's not quite what you see. I'm not diving in front of people, taking bullets. I'm protecting the cheese sandwiches. So there we go. That was my first protection job. But it went okay. You know, nothing happened, thankfully. And there's certainly a sense of relief when your protected person is back into the car and away, you know, because that's your job over, that's your role over. And as long as they've stayed safe, then it's, you know, it's been a successful job. So, yeah, that was the first one out of the way. Now, the second one was a bit different. It was a visiting politician who came from overseas. He was very well known, a real firebrand of a politician that had a reputation as being quite a difficult character. Now, like I said, some of these people, imagine, you know, if you were a royal or something and you have protection pretty much from birth, you know, you'd be very much used to it, wouldn't you, with a protection officer following you around everywhere and your every move being kind of not only scrutinized but controlled to a degree. It must be very frustrating. Now, certainly some of those, you know, do push back a bit, you know, don't like protection officers, don't want them with them, don't feel the need. So they can make your life, you know, a bit difficult. But certainly if you're a politician, you know, then you've never, ever had protection in your life. And you suddenly you come into this new role and you may be offered, well, in some roles, you'll be insisted that you have protection, as was the case for this guy. And they really make life difficult. In fact, they will actively work against you. And this guy had a reputation for doing just that. Now, I was on the kind of night team. He was staying in a hotel. So in this scenario, and it changes completely for the venue and the threat level and various other things, he was in a hotel room and we were in the hotel room opposite him. We'd put up some temporary CCTV in that hallway. So we had kind of three screens up within the room and we were able to control that hallway. No one could get to the corridor at all without us seeing them. We came on at kind of, I think it was 10 o'clock at night, something like that, took over from the day team or the late team. And that was the three of us in at night. And what generally would happen is you'd rotate round the roles every hour, perhaps, or maybe every 2 hours. So somebody would be resting, kind of laying on the bed, fully clothed and ready to go. They might have taken their handgun out of their holster and put it on the bedside table because it's pretty lumpy for a start. You know, it's not really the comfiest thing to lay down on. But that person would be very much expected to be resting and, you know, recovering because, you know, they may be called upon at short notice. And then the other two, one would be sitting there kind of watching the CCTV screens and monitoring that. And then the other one would be sat there in support. So perhaps in a slightly less, you know, kind of switched on mode and perhaps relaxing on the sofa or something within one of the suites, but still up and able to literally at a second's notice be out that door and offering support. should it be required. But the idea is, from the outside world, should any other guests, you know, walk down that corridor, there is nothing overtly that suggests, you know, there's anyone of any importance in that hallway. You see on the telly again, don't you, with you know, chairs pulled up outside doors and things. We just, you know, with a cop, you know, uniform cop sat there or something like that. We just don't do that, because all that does is attract attention to the fact that there's somebody possibly important, depending on your view, sat in that room. And it's just what we don't want. You know, we're all about subtleties if we can achieve it. So we were sat in the room, and we had the three of us there, as I've explained already, those three roles. And we'd got to about 2 or 3 in the morning. Nothing much was happening. It was a Friday night. This was a seaside town and quite a plush hotel. And at this point, so we've got one in the bed sleeping. I'm watching the CCTV cameras. We've all got handguns in pancake covert holsters. And also there's an MP5 available. So a long gun, as we call it. But they had folding stock. So they actually, this is a small sort of submachine gun that can be folded into quite a small position. And we carried, or we had the option of something called a Swedish harness, which was effectively like a shoulder holster for this MP5. But it means you could attach a bungee cord and have it tucked away underneath your armpit. So if you had a fairly bulky jacket on, you could be walking down the street with an MP5 in your armpit, effectively on a folding stock, and just gave you, you know, a lot of extra firepower should it be needed. Had a big impact on someone if you needed to actually draw that weapon as well. There's a certain, you know, psychological element to drawing out a weapon like that. But generally that would be on the side, you know, only needed or only used if needed. And as a rule, you know, you fully expected on a job like this to just be sat there all night with nothing happening at all. And then at 7 o'clock in the morning, the day team would come on, you'd hand over, and that would be you away and properly able to, you know, go and get your head down and get some sleep at home. But sure enough, we got to 2 or 3 in the morning. One of my colleagues is dozing on the bed, as he should have been. And the other one decides he's going to go off to the loo. So he goes off to the loo. And now, we also had been given the heads up that our protected person, this politician, didn't sleep very well. So it is a possibility that he could suddenly, you know, appear. And sure enough, of course, and without knowing it, he picked the perfect timing. So my colleague was in the toilet. I was sat watching the screens and the other one's dozing, not really in a position to immediately respond, or certainly, you know, he would need some time to wake up. And there's no, you know, bear in mind, this guy knows that his protection team are in the room opposite. He doesn't come and knock on the door and say, just so you know, I'm going to go and do whatever. He's got no interest in helping us at all. So he literally, the first heads up we got was, there's a noise in the corridor. I looked at the screens. I could see the door open. He was fully clothed. He was off and walking there. He was a really fast walker and he was off down the corridor. So I barely had a chance to shout to my sort of colleagues that, he's on the move, you know, and I was out the door with him. I'd quickly clipped on the MP5 in the Swedish harness and it was tucked away under my armpit. And then I had my handgun as well, picked up, you know, my big bulky jacket, threw that on. I know I was out with him kind of playing catch up. By the time I was out, you know, he was already down the end of the corridor and he didn't like lifts, so he was away down the stairs. So we're massively on the back foot here playing catch up. So I caught up with him. Now, bearing in mind that generally you won't have a lot of dealings with these people. It depends what role you've got. You know, if you're a protection officer, you'll have a bit more of involvement. But if they're sort of British royalty, then chances are they'll have a lady in waiting, or, you know, a personal secretary or someone like that with them. And that's generally the person you'll have dealings with. So it's not like you know these people well and they're your friends and you're having a natter with them. I'm not saying that doesn't happen, particularly if you've been with someone for years, but it's not, you know, it's not really like that. And certainly with this guy, this politician, you know, I'd had no dealings with him at all. I didn't know him at all. I had not even spoken to him because I'd always just been on the night team on this particular job. So I did the best I could to catch up with him, and I got to the stairwell, kind of opened the door and looked down as you can, you know, sort of multiple flights of stairs to find him 2 or 3, you know, flights below me, kind of walking fast as he did and on a mission to get out of the hotel. So I had to work fast, you know, and sort of run down these stairs as fast as I could, hoping that my colleagues had heard that we were out and moving, because to be out by yourself with no support is not good at all. It's not ideal. But what can you do? You know, classic golden rule here, you know, do something. Don't just sit there looking at the screens thinking, oh, that's him left in. Perhaps I should have done something, you know. So I had to go with it. So I raced down the stairs with him, eventually caught up with him just as we left the lobby. And we were leaving the hotel lobby, you know, out into in the sort of fresh air, as it were. And I said to him, all right, so, you know, I'm just catching up with you. I'm here if you need me. And I wasn't intending to go and chat with him. I was just going to go and sort of trail along behind him, so that I was able to support and help if there was a problem. But, you know, I wasn't looking to go and chat with him. He shot off. Now, bearing in mind, it's kind of 3 a.m. on a Friday night into early hours Saturday morning. And this is a town, a fairly busy town on the south coast, with a lot of nightclubs, pubs and bars and, you know, sort of nightlife. Now, this guy was quite recognisable. Most people will have seen him pretty regularly on the news. So I was a bit concerned about that. And it got even worse as we got down to the seafront. And we were approaching one of the sort of piers that I knew had a nightclub on it. There was various revelers hanging around and drunks and, you know, people hanging about. And there was, you know, people smoking cannabis I could smell, you know, and lots of drunks, you know, sort of pushing and some fights brewing. And I was thinking, this is a disaster. I'm by myself. You know, I still don't know if my colleagues even know I'm out here. I'm really hoping we don't have a problem, because by myself, you know, you do not want to be taking a drunk on who's got, you know, no more intention than, you know, sort of getting a light off you or something. And, you know, bearing in mind, I had an MP5 tucked away and my handgun, and I've got to try and look after this guy. It's not a good scenario. Anyway, I caught up with him and I said, sir, look, is there any chance we could go a slightly different route? Because, you know, you can see there's a few revelers about, and, you know, this is going to cause me a few problems. You know, the rest of my team haven't managed to catch up with me. And he said, you know, I'll stop worrying, we'll be fine, and we'll be all right, you know. And then he said, walk with me if you want to, you know, that's fine. And then he just, you know, we had a brief chat, but he was basically saying, I don't sleep very well, and sometimes I like to just come out for a walk, you know, to sort of clear my mind and get some fresh air. And I was thinking, well, that's brilliant, but maybe not quite in this scenario. It's not helping me, you know. But it went okay, thankfully. We basically, the rest of the team never were able to catch up with me, because when you came out of the hotel, you know, there was about 5 different routes you could have taken. So typically they'd come flying out behind me as well, trying to catch up, and had to split up themselves to take the various options, you know, to try and find us. But unfortunately, and typically, had taken the wrong ones. So they never caught up with me. But basically, we did a loop. We walked out for about an hour or so. I tried to loop him round, you know, the sort of worst of the revelers. Thankfully, no one recognised him, because, you know, in some respects, he wasn't very popular, and a lot of people didn't like his politics. So that could have turned into a bit of a drama for sure. But we did an hour's loop out and around, walked back and got back into the hotel, and we effectively put him back to bed, not literally, you know, but back to his room. And then by that time, I'd caught up with my colleagues, and we were able to sort of let them know what was going on. So yeah, it was briefly quite exciting. It had real potential for going very, very wrong, but it's all about, you know, sort of thinking on your feet and dealing with things. But it was yeah, it was a bit of a concern for sure. So that was another one. In the meantime, after that, I'd done a few more jobs where I'd been venue officer, and I just started to get involved in the planning side of things. So I was going out to the venues when we had early notification that someone was coming down onto our patch. You'd kind of link in with their personal protection officer if they had one, because if they were a visiting member of the royal family, for example, I think we had some Spanish royal family come in, and I think it was either Spanish queen or princess at the time, maybe. And obviously, she, you know, she's not here regularly, so she doesn't have her own protection officer, certainly not assigned from us. But for the period of her visit, she was assigned one. So we would liaise with them, and they would come down and meet us. And the venue for the next trip was, I think it was an art gallery that was getting opened. So again, I went along and met the PPO, the protection officer, and we checked out the venue. This was, you know, kind of a month ahead, maybe. And had a pretty good idea, having spoken to the staff, of how that would work, you know. And then on the day, I was one of the venue officers and knew the various routes to the location. And once again, you know, when they come sweeping in there, it's certainly not a cavalcade by any means. It is quite possibly just one or two cars. That PPO is looking for me and sees, you know, sees my face and ugly as it is, but realizes, you know, that everything's okay at the venue and he's pretty happy to come in. So that was quite an interesting one as well. And it was just a little, that was the first time that I took a bit of a step up and got involved in the planning side of it, which I quite enjoyed. You know, it can be quite full on, but that's where the important stuff happens. As I've said to you before, we need to plan out a lot of the potential issues from the day, rather than, you know, be caught on the back foot and try to deal with them at the time, which is never good. Around about this time as well, I first got involved with looking after the Prime Minister on the sort of outer ring of his security at the time as well. And obviously you can imagine that is a bit more of a circus coming to town. There's a lot more people involved, a lot more cars. You know for a fact you've got people that really don't agree with their politics. And it doesn't matter who the Prime Minister is, that will always be the case, of course. So that was certainly a bit more high threat and high risk, but enjoyed those. And don't forget, you have to plan everything down to the T. You know, it's even, you know, you're looking at police resources getting in, specialist resources, lots of people travel with them, you know, and they all have to be looked after as well. But ultimately, you know, your role is there to protect that person. And then finally, one of the last jobs I did before I changed roles completely was the Prime Minister was coming to town again. It was another sort of coastal seaside town, and they were coming to open a library. See a bit of a theme here, don't you, with the libraries and the art galleries. You know, I'd imagine that's a lot of their world, these people, you know, sort of opening up people's and pressing the flesh, as we would say, you know, kissing babies and shaking hands. But the Prime Minister was coming to open a library in this particular town, and I was given the job from day one, and I was to plan it and brief it on the day and run it right through. And so I would pick the venue officers, you know, so I'd taken perhaps a little bit of a step up at this point. I went out months ahead and planned this and met the staff. I had to, you know, have photos available, and then I had to brief various people, you know, sort of senior officers that were involved that would always come and meet, you know, someone like that, the Prime Minister, and also all the sort of staff there. And obviously you can imagine the staff all get vetted and looked at, and sometimes they're handpicked on the day so that certain people as well are going to be closer to the Prime Minister and you know, sort of have you know, dealings with them on the day. Very early in the morning I was out, and this involved a lot of uniformed officers. I think in total there was about 100 uniformed officers that were going to help us sort of with crowd control and just generally being in and around the venue, and also on the final drive in to ensure that, you know, the crowds are kept back and barriers go up and stuff. So I actually went in to the local police station, which is one of the larger ones in my force, and did the briefing for the uniformed officers. Biggest briefing I've ever given, certainly in terms of the amount of people, certainly at that time, about 100 officers. And you're telling them about, you know who's coming, and I don't need to show you their photo and what have you. But the thing you're really trying to get across to them is, I know you want to look at them. I know you're interested, you know, when they get out the car and you want to turn around and stare at them. But if there's one time I really need you looking into the crowd for that loner, that person we spoke about last week in the episode, the person who doesn't fit in, he's not happy, he's not waving a flag, he seems, you know, kind of, he's got a bit of a fixed stare and he's a bit intent on what's going on. Maybe he's taking this opportunity to move a bit closer, and just prior to the person turning up, you know, they've now moved in a position so they're right by the barrier. That's the person I need you looking out for. I need you to turn and face. And when the Prime Minister turns up, do not turn around and look at them. I need you looking in the crowd. That's how you're going to do your job. So that was the thing that I really got across in the briefing to them. And it went okay. A little bit scary, you know, having never sort of briefed people on that scale before. But I think it went okay. And certainly I'm chatted with, you know, the team later. They seemed happy enough with it. Because obviously I was being monitored as well to see whether I was up to it and whether I'd done a good job and whether it was something I was going to be trusted with again. So yeah, it went okay. They came in, the briefings went well. I'd picked the venue officers from the protection team. They'd had a briefing from me as well, and then I'd done the introductions with the sort of staff at the library with the venue officers. And obviously I'd had the sort of most dealings with the actual protection officer for the Prime Minister, so that again, when they came sweeping in, they see my face and they're happy that, you know, everything is as it should be. The place is as secure as it gets, you know. And it, yeah, no problems at all. It all went well, and that little sigh of relief again when they're driving off off of your patch, and you know it's kind of not your problem anymore, and you've done your bit, and it's all gone okay. So yeah, close protection work. Really enjoyed it actually. It was good fun. A totally different element again to policing. You know, when you first turn up as a bobby on the beat with your top hat and you're walking round in uniform, it's the very last place you expect to be. But as I've always said, the police is, you know, a really interesting job with, you know, loads and loads of different roles, and you'd be surprised just where you can find yourself. And we'll certainly look at a few more of those as we go forward. But next week we'll look at something different completely. I transferred forces and I moved from the sort of local county force and up into the Met, the main Metropolitan Police, the police force that you know, looks after London. And already I can hear people, you know, sucking their teeth and booing and hissing later, just because I've mentioned the word the Met. They don't have a particularly good reputation for various reasons, and we'll go into some of that next week. Thanks very much for listening. Hope it was vaguely interesting to you and that you'll come back. Good downloads again this week, and really well. So I really appreciate that. But we'll speak again next week. Take it easy. Cheers. Bye.